in your face.
Krishna, welcome to Melbourne.
Thanks for having me.
It is so exciting you've come all this way to find a sperm donor. Tell us about first trimester.
Yeah, it's a durational piece of performance that I'm performing at Arts House, and I sit on stage for between 3 to 9 hours, and I interview people every 10 minutes, a different person sits across me, in the hopes of finding me and my partner a sperm donor, because we're both trans and want a baby.
So have you got all these people lined up?
Most of them, yes, but I don't know who they are or when. I know friends have signed up too, but I don't know when anyone's coming because there's a different person who takes care of that.
But I just love the randomness of all of this. It gives us a spontaneity on stage, you know, even though it's a major life decision. It's unique.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's sort of, I don't know if it's unique as a thing that people do, because I feel like queer people have forever interviewed friends, family, potential donors. It's just that it's a bit more public and on a stage.
Yeah. How do you prepare for that?
I mean, I can't really prepare because you never know where the conversations might go, but we've got obviously questions that we ask them. That's a form of preparation, I guess, because I know what the questions will be.
So what are you going to ask?
All sorts of questions. I think people usually assume that if you're looking for a sperm donor, that it's going to be like questions about, I don't know, medical questions or other things. But actually, we've got such a range of questions. For example, one of my favorite questions is, are you a bad boy? Because it tells me so much about who the person is in the way they respond to it. So it's just a range of questions, or like things like, what do you think happens when we die? Which might give us a bit more about what people think. Some people might give us a religious answer. Some people might give us a spiritual answer. Some people might. It sort of just helps us understand the sort of person they might be.
Do you want a bad boy?
Well, I don't know. It depends on the context, I think, and everything else that goes with it.
And how you define bad.
Yeah, exactly. Because a bad boy could be good. And a good boy could be bad.
Yeah. So I guess it's all about compatibility, isn't it? Is that a major kind of, you know, thing? You want them to be compatible?
I think so, yeah, because one of the main things when me and my partner, we first started looking on sperm donor websites and sort of very quickly realized that all of the information was very superficial. It was about how people looked. And we had bigger questions about who this person was, because even if you go through a clinic and they're anonymous at 18, the child still has access to them and they become a part of your life in some way. And we were like, it'd be much nicer to know that we get on with them and they're not a transphobe and they're someone that we could just have in our lives. So yeah, I think compatibility is the main thing, because it's like interviewing for a friend who's there forever from that point.
Are you kind of resigned to the possibility of not finding anyone while you're in Melbourne? And yeah, have you thought about that? And I guess you have, but I guess what would you do if that was what happened?
I mean, yes, that is possible. And actually, Nam's the sixth place we've been to. So, I mean, we don't know who we're going to pick at the end. We've obviously got shot lists of people everywhere we go. And actually, at the end of each person's interview, like when they participate in the show, they're told to get back in touch with us if they do want to carry this conversation forward. And then we obviously keep a shot list as well. And then we see where it overlaps. So we've got people from everywhere on our list. So we don't know. We might not find someone here. We might also find someone here. Who knows?
Wow. Okay. So now Melbourne is the sixth city you've done this at. So you've performed at five other cities with people coming in. So first of all, where?
We started with London, because that's where I'm based and that's where we made the show. And then we did Aotearoa, Auckland, and then we did Switzerland, Dublin, Denmark, and now we're here.
Wow.
I think I named all the places. I've lost track of them.
And have you got other places that you're going to? Like,
no, this is the final time we're ever doing the show. This is it. Which is really cute, because actually I met my partner here in Nam 7 years ago when I was here touring a show and we matched on Tinder. So it's a very special place for us. And it's really nice that this is where we're ending it.
Wow. So your partner, is your partner from Melbourne, or were they visiting, or like what's the...
He's from Aotearoa, but he used to live here.
Wow. How exciting. How exciting. So what I'm fascinated by, there's an 8-hour performance on Saturday, the 18th of October. Tell us about that. Flesh that out for us.
I mean, it's exactly the same. So every 10 minutes, a different person sits across from me. And it just goes on and on for 9 hours. We do have a lunch break. So we do get to pee, which is great. But it's essentially that. But people can come and go from the space as they like. It's a bit like a gallery setting, except it's in a theatre. So people can see a couple of interviews and then they could go out for lunch, come back, watch a couple of interviews. So it's sort of flexible if you were to come see it.
So you arrived.
You're not trapped there for 9 hours, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, you must be kind of, you must have like itchy feet after being on that plane for so long. You've only recently arrived in Melbourne. You flew from London and arrived Saturday night, and it's Tuesday now. So this is all so new to you. What's it feel like being in Melbourne with this 24, six seasons in a day kind of weather that we're having?
It's great. I feel like I'm experiencing everything all at once, so it's perfect. But I'm also really happy for the sun. And I know it's getting warmer here, but we were just about going into sort of autumn, winter. So I'm happy to have some sun again.
Tell us about your life in London.
What do you want to know?
Well, I mean, look, I just find it fascinating, the situation in Europe at the moment. I find it really disturbing what's happening in the UK towards trans people. People are fearful it's going to happen here, even though thankfully there's more political support here, I think, by governments for trans folks. But it depends whereabouts you are in the country too. Like what's it like for you in London?
I mean, it's obviously very scary for most trans people. It's sort of horrible to see how bad it's getting, or how the anti-trans sentiment has just been growing like year on year. But I will say at the same time, there's a lot of like camaraderie between people, and there is sort of like community level backing of each other in a way I think might not have existed to that extent maybe previously, because needs must. And I think on a day-to-day basis, I think that was one of the main things that we learned from doing the show in London when we started, was actually we assumed that most of the people signing up were probably going to be queer people, and they're probably going to, or if they weren't, they're not going to be very trans-friendly. But actually what we learned speaking to people one-to-one on stage was that most people are not. We have all this noise in the media about all the anti-trans sentiment, all the shit, but actually in real life, a lot of people turned up that weren't. They were just like cis straight people, like cis straight men, which I was very surprised by. And most people were there for trans people. So it was really like a heartwarming experience to actually learn that in real time, because I think often we forget that people exist outside the media and they might think otherwise.
That's so fascinating that there is kind of like this right-wing echo chamber that's happening on social media that's affecting governments, that means that governments, act in a certain way that doesn't necessarily reflect what's happening with the everyday person, yet that kind of, far-right mindset is imposed on us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I'm assuming governments are sort of following the guide of like people with money who've got specific agendas. I'm thinking about J.K. Rowling specifically, and they're sort of trying to appease the people with money because everything comes back to capitalism. But yeah, they're not really listening to what people actually think or want otherwise.
So all of that considered, you'd be having a child in London.
Yeah.
In this incredibly precarious time for Europe and the rest of the world globally. Wow. Does that kind of come into your decision-making insofar as your selection of a person, do you think, to be the biological third parent, if you like?
I don't think it's been a part of us like working out who this third person is, but I think it is a question we do like ask in the show as well, is it the right time to be having a child in this climate, with like the climate crisis? Like, what are the Like, what does a desire come down to? Is it just like, I don't know, a narcissistic need for like a child that looks like yours? Is there more to it in different ways? And actually, one of the main answers that people often give is they're like, well, you need hope and kids are hopeful. And this is probably the time to do it then, because that they're the future and you sort of need that at this point. But also, yeah, it is also scary because you're like, I don't know, how, like, what if in a year's time when... Also because of the recent ruling in the UK about gendered spaces, like trans people can access gendered spaces. What does that mean for someone who's pregnant, if you've got to go to the hospital, maternity care, perinatal care, etc. But what's also amazing is we, like, thankfully have, like, queer midwives in our, like, community and people that we know where, like, if we can't go somewhere, they'll get this baby out and we'll be okay. So we're planning for the worst, but... I think at the end, it's knowing that there's people around you. And obviously, not everyone has that. Not everyone has access to a queer midwife who's going to be able to help you birth a child. But yeah.
Look, I don't, you know, you probably don't want to tell tales, but you've done five other cities. What's the trippiest answer? What's the most bizarre answer someone's given you during discussion?
Ah, the trippiest answer. Well, we did have... a serial sperm donor in the UK. He sort of, there's a few people that travel around the world donating sperm in a not great, not ethical way. And some of his answers were wild. Like he said he's got 80 kids across the world and he was like, you should take my sperm because all my kids are like future Elon Musks. Tongue twister. Yeah, which I thought was pretty wild because... I don't know, he seemed to have not understood anything about the show, but he was there to donate sperm. I don't even know how he found it. He came all the way from America to the UK to do it. He must have some sort of like Google alert for anything to do with sperm donors. I don't know.
What has been the most beautiful answer someone's given you?
That's so hard because there's so many beautiful answers. So when we did the show in Copenhagen, I interviewed a queer parent who basically when actually the next person coming up, the next interviewee is my 13-year-old child who was born through sperm donation, and you can ask her anything you want. And that was a very special conversation because I had a bunch of questions and this 13-year-old was like, oh, don't worry about any of that. As long as this child has a friend who also has the same experience, you're good. And I was like, that's perfect. Yeah, that's all you sort of, you forget that actually, especially as queer people, you might be trying to do something like, you know, in quotations, perfectly, because people are sort of, you assume that people are, I don't know, judging you in a specific way from the outside. And this child was like, nah, forget all of that. They just need a friend who's got the same experience. And that was really cute.
Krishna, it sounds extraordinary. First trimester is happening at Arts House, October 16, 17 and 18. It has been wonderful to meet you at 3CR today. All the best.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It is so great to see you and hear about your journey. Thanks heaps.
3CR. In Your Face would like to thank Thorn Harbour Health for their sponsorship of this program. Thorn Harbour Health envisions a future where our LGBTIQ plus communities and people living with HIV are healthy and live safely with dignity and well-being. To find out more, search for Thorn Harbour Health online.